The Dawn Prep Journal is with Dennis Atwood, the National Program Manager for the Metropolitan Medical Response System. The MMRS program began in 1996 with HHS and in 2003 went to DHS and is now one of several grant programs which the department funds. The primary focus of MMRS is to develop or enhance existing emergency preparedness systems to respond effectively to a mass casualty event. MMRS aspires to prepare and coordinate local law enforcement, fire, hazmat, EMS, hospital, public health, and other first response personnel in the planning and use of local resources to respond more effectively in the early hours of a crisis until external assistance arrives and is operational. Dennis Atwood has been the program manager for MMRS since March 2003, and prior to that, he led and co-chaired the Decontamination Strategy Project Team for the Catastrophic Incident Planning Working Group. He's been with FEMA since January 1985, and prior to that, he had numerous federal civil service and U.S. Navy career experience. Dennis, thanks very much for taking time to be with us.
Thank you very much, John. We appreciate Dawn Prep Journal's interest in the MMRS program.
Well, most of our Dawn Prep members, as you probably know, are familiar with the MMRS program, but some may not be, and others may need an update on where you are now. So, if you will, let's start with the sort of MMRS 101 questions. Now, how many jurisdictions are you working with now? The last number I heard was 124. And if you can tell us a little bit also on the funding and schedule for near-term MMRS system stand-ups.
Actually, yes, correct, John. We are in 124 metropolitan area jurisdictions, and we do not envision adding any jurisdictions to that base now because we're at a level of population where we think that makes sense, and the funding would not permit standing up of additional MRS jurisdictions. In addition, the current jurisdictions are continually encouraged and supported in increasing regionalization of their efforts, so they're reaching out to their contiguous neighbors. In the near term, the big picture is Homeland Security Presidential Directive Number 8, which is national preparedness and its associated doctrine and documents, including the National Preparedness Goal and Guidance, the Target Capabilities List, and even more detailed, the Universal Task List. MMRS functionality is present in arguably 22 of the 37 current target capabilities. Obvious ones including national priorities for medical surge and mass prophylaxis, but also regionalization, interoperable communications, regionalization, and many others. Just last Thursday, the White House issued its Katrina Lessons Learned report, and there are a significant number of very important public health and medical response recommendations in there about the federal response. Similarly, we need to examine local responses in those kind of catastrophic events and learn from the Katrina experience, which did actually implement one of the national planning scenarios for HSPD-8. So that's our big picture now, is to engage through the grant program, which the 06 Homeland Security Grant Program is very much framed around the national preparedness goals and priorities and target capabilities.
Well, now, what's the lowest level of government among your jurisdictions and your highest? I mean, do we go below a county or a municipality, and do we group counties and metropolitan areas, for example, say, in terms of a projected operational area? Now, you mentioned regionalization. I know that's a priority with DHS.
We actually do not go below the city or county level as far as an operational area. Our funding recipients might be a department of local or county government, such as a public health department or a fire department, but the program, the Metropolitan Medical Response System program that's established, reaches at least a large metropolitan area or its surrounding county or counties, and many of them have grown beyond that. Some examples: in the Hampton Roads area of Virginia, there are four funded MMRS jurisdictions: Virginia Beach, Norfolk, Chesapeake, and Newport News. But they have 12 city and county partners that participate in their regional system to affect 16 units of government in their system. And that stretches from, in essence, just south of Williamsburg on around to Suffolk. In the Atlanta, Georgia area, Atlanta and Fulton County are working with 21 other counties in their region. And what used to be Colorado Springs is now the Pikes Peak MMRS with 11 counties. So it's been a hallmark of this program to encourage that kind of local regionalization. But because there are so many kinds of regions administratively in state government, homeland security regions, emergency management regions, public health regions, that we adopt the term operational area to denote the contiguous jurisdictions that participate in the MMRS. The funded ones we call our primary MMRS. The others are affiliated jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm. So does that mean that MMRS is paralleling the DEHS drive towards developing the integrated regional response capability? I guess it does.
Very much. In fact, I would say the reverse might be the case, that MMRS has funded, supported, and proselytized regionalization before HSPD 8 came out. So, as I indicated, we're very much on board with regionalization.
Dennis, let's look more closely at the MMRS grants. Now, these are grants with the local government jurisdictions. Tell us a little bit about what the MMRS grants require of the jurisdictions.
Let's start with our current grant mechanism, if we can, John, which is to be a part of the Homeland Security grant package. And that grant package and the guidance on this was released last December for the fiscal 06. This is one of six grants within the Homeland Security grants package. This package was brought together as a policy requirement both by former Secretary Ridge and by the Congress to give a better unified view on Homeland Security funding for state and local efforts, including the Urban Area Security Initiative program. But the other components of the grant program, of course, the state Homeland Security grant, UASI or Urban Area grant, Citizen Corps, Emergency Management Performance grants, Law Enforcement Terrorism Preparedness, and MMRS. Now, in fiscal 06, the Homeland Security grant package moved into a new arena of more risk-based funding. And the state grant, the UASI grant, need to deal with their risk factors in their applications. Now, there are a couple of formula grants in the package. MMRS is one of them. So MMRS and Citizen Corps are formula grants within the package. Beyond that kind of format, we do have in our current guidance, we've 12 what we call capability focus areas, but they are indeed all target capabilities under the HSPD-8 array. And those 12 include strengthening medical surge, mass prophylaxis, CBRNE, detection response, and decontamination. And as everyone, we have to get on board with some of the overarching national priorities. We'd mentioned that medical surge and mass prophylaxis are national priorities for fiscal 06, all these so far. But the overarching ones are interoperable communications, strengthening information sharing and collaboration, regional collaboration, and there's several more. But the point is that we've brought this within the context and requirements of achieving these targeted capabilities. 06 is the first federal funding year for this effort. It's envisioned as a three-year effort to get at this set of capabilities. In addition, because of the potential impact of pandemic flu on critical resources, we do have requirements regarding continuity of operations planning for the emergency medical, mental health, and public health supporting infrastructure. And as always, we require our jurisdictions to maintain the capabilities they've already achieved over the years.
So the deliverables, actually, in terms of the capabilities, would be a statement of operational capability, right?
There are pieces that are a little more specific than that over the years, but that's one of them. The operational components of this MRS system, again, which is a partnership among, first responders and what's called first receivers, the medical treatment folks, public health, emergency management, volunteers, and the business sector, are discrete plans for CBR, NNE, threats, forward movement of patients, equipment management, and supplies management, which include a pharmaceutical cache, which we fund for the MRS jurisdictions, and various other steering committee requirements that are, is the key to the program. So those are the fundamentals, and then on top of that are now these targeted capabilities as envisioned mm-hmm. in HSPD 8.
Can you tell us how all of that might relate to hospitals, for example?
Hospitals are clearly an essential partner in any mass casualty situation, and because 99% of them in the United States are privately owned, mm-hmm. they're an important partner, that it's important to understand how to approach them and how to bring them into the effort. This is done largely through our steering committee, which in each jurisdiction is comprised of representatives of all the key components, now and including Citizen Corps, Medical Reserve Corps representation, National Guard representation, Red Cross, so that the hospitals understand that the program benefits them by making them a key or critical part of this system in this metropolitan area. So therefore, personal protection equipment, decontamination capabilities, monitoring and detection equipment are brought to them in addition to what the HRSA Hospital Preparedness Program provides to make them viable, more viable in this situation, and get the kind of support they need to keep operating under these conditions.
Dennis, when you were listing the targeted capabilities, you mentioned CBRNE. Can you talk a little bit further about that? Let's drill into that issue area a little bit.
Well, there is, among the 37 targeted capabilities, one which is, again, a national priority, is improve CBRNE detection, response, and decontamination capabilities. So that's very broad. Within the Metropolitan Medical Response System program concept, this means that those participating jurisdictions will have assessed the threat in their situation regarding their demographics, their topography, their critical infrastructure, and the mode of operation of their critical first response and first receiver assets. And the plans that they prepare are a combination of both some uniform or standard concepts that are understood through otherwise the promulgation of HRSA hospital capacity standards, the content of the national planning scenarios that are a piece of the HSPD 8 picture, and their local capabilities. And that's what the target capabilities effort is. Mm-hmm. How ready do we need to be? How ready are we today? And how do we close the gap?
Mm-hmm.
So you would find, either as a part of the emergency operations plans, the mass casualty incident mm-hmm. annex for the jurisdictions involved, hazard-specific information to the extent that it's segregated from the main part of the plan is up to them, as long as it's covered down to an SOP type of concept, and even field manuals or FOGs, as are sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that a FOG is meant to clarify operations in a situation, but to the person, that they would understand and recognize with any technical assistance they need on hand or by reach-back capability what's going on in the case of a weaponized chemical, mm-hmm. a bio event. Very difficult to tell if it's purposeful or part of a normal disease spread, but all the tools and techniques that they want to access and use are incorporated in those plans in their training and in their exercising programs. Mm-hmm. And so because of the nuances, and there's a commonality even between WMD and other mass casualty events, there's also very critical deltas of sophistication mm-hmm. that we have to abide in. So that's what you'd see in the typical MRS jurisdictional plan is the chemical, the biological, the radiological, nuclear, mm-hmm. and the explosive treated as necessary, their extended detail, but that from the department director down to the chief and deputy chief down to the fire truck EMS vehicle, that those folks have the necessary awareness skills and training mm-hmm. and then degrees of specialization above that as necessary to mm-hmm. effect an effective response.
So. Dennis, quality assurance. Do you want to say anything about the quality assurance reviews that would be involved in the process?
Well, the deliverables in the time before we got to the Homeland Security grant package were individually reviewed by federal staff and by contract support staff. In the Homeland Security grant process, there are six-month reports due from the grantees, and again, the grants all go through a single administrative agency at the state level to the sub-grantees. But there are there's preparedness officers at headquarters here, and there's regional preparedness officers that are involved with the MRS program that monitor as they need to between these six-month reports what activities are underway in the funded jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to talk about the local MMRS systems themselves. What's the typical startup period for a system?
In the history of the program, the startup money was provided on a two-year basis. And there was a sequence of events from a meeting first with the local designated project officer, and then a development plan was effected, the establishment of their steering committee, then the beginnings of enhancing their capabilities. I believe every jurisdiction that we're involved in truly did not start from scratch, and that's why our program literature says this is federal funding to enhance previous capabilities and to build on them. So generally it took 2 years, and sometimes an extension was needed, but it's a fairly elaborate set of requirements that we laid out for folks, and I think it's marvelous that so many places have achieved this with not a lot of money involved. Mm-hmm.
Now, how about the variations on how the jurisdictions have structured the systems? Can you give us a sense of the range there?
The major option that's in the program as to whether or not to establish a Metropolitan Medical Strike Team or Task Force, I think, as California has used the terminology. And that's a pre-designated, rostered array of personnel and equipment to devote to this effort. Others have decided not to exercise that option, but still would array their capabilities as necessary under Incident Command or Unified Command to respond to this situation. We do have, I'm often asked, does it make a difference who leads a steering committee, whether it's an emergency medical services person or a public health person or a fire services person? And truly it doesn't, because that would say that credentialing is destiny. What matters more is that the steering committee meets regularly, and is the integration of effort, you'll see, with subcommittees and folks engaged in the various activities across the board. So the variations would occur, clearly, though, based on the assets they have at hand. If let's say you have a population of 750,000 and you have two level one trauma units and three level two, that you may be considered fairly robust in what you have. Others may have less than that. The distances involved between key medical treatment facilities, physical barriers like a big river like the Mississippi, the two Kansas cities are trying to work together, or in the Hampton Roads, the Atlantic Chesapeake interface. So they will have to modify their approach based on their threat, their topology, their demographics, and their assets. What HSPD 8 does is put people on a unified setting toward assessing their situation and moving uniformly, conceptually, nationally toward closing those gaps.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of federal support do you provide? Provision for things like lessons learned and best practices?
We have two main vehicles for those, John. Our program website, which we do want to encourage folks to visit, which is the URL is currently mmrs.fema.gov, though we're not any longer in FEMA. You'll find the various federal websites have their antecedent organizations reflected in their URLs. And we strongly advocate that folks use ELIS, the Lessons Learned Information System, which Office of Grants and Trainings, almost said our older organization, Office for Domestic Preparedness, but the Office of Grants and Trainings official Lessons Learned and Community Sharing website for best practices. So in addition to, of course, our funding and the training that's available through the Homeland Security Grant Program and the Homeland Security Exercise Evaluation Program are all assets and resources that we encourage our jurisdictions to avail themselves of.
Let's talk a little bit about the sponsors. What kind of local oversight and management goes on here as far as they're concerned?
Again, the key is the steering committee, which represents the elements of what I refer to as that partnership star graphic that you'll find on our website, that all those components are represented on the steering committee. I mean, that's the emergency medical services, the medical treatment facilities, public health, emergency management, of course, the other first responders, and citizens, volunteer groups, and business and industry, as well as National Guard, Red Cross. So that is the key. We feel that the really key to success is there's an active and engaged steering committee.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, it then, of course, would be your key appointed and elected officials at the local level, and then a formalistic way up to through the state, whatever mechanisms the single administrative agency employs regarding the management of the grants in progress under the Homeland Security strategies.
Mm-hmm.
But let me mention in this regard, at the state level, all three of the key affiliated federal funding programs, the HRSA Hospital Preparedness One, the CDC Public Health Emergency Preparedness Cooperative Agreement, and the Homeland Security Package, require all each the establishment and operation of the same senior advisory committee. And the role of that senior advisory committee at the state level is to ensure the best use of the three funding packages mutually for the benefit of the capabilities of the state and its local jurisdictions.
Well, now, what are your typical sponsors? And also, is the process somewhat the same as what we find with the NDMS DMAT sponsorships?
Well, we don't have official sponsors in that sense, John. These are members then of the MRS system, and as represented on their steering committee.
So, oh, I see.
Yeah. We don't require, for instance, DMAT might need to be sponsored by a hospital or a public health department, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not the issue here.
So the sponsors are the personnel in the fields that are represented on the steering committee.
Right, they're the members of the MRS partnership at the local level.
Understood. All right, what about the typical MMRS development plan? I guess that includes primary and component plans and the plans that are related to the jurisdiction's particular vulnerability assessments, which you'd mentioned earlier, and also the critical infrastructure and the topology, as you say, and the like.
That's right, John. The development plan is really part of the baseline effort when they get started, and that does, it's a vision statement, a strategy statement on how to build out their MMRS. These days, under the Homeland Security Grant Program and Homeland Security Strategies, what has kind of replaced that, if you will, are the actual strategies, goals, objectives that you would find in the Homeland Security Strategy documents, both at the UASI level, and, of course, every UASI has a MRS presence, and at the state level.
Mm-hmm. Now, how living is this document? For example, once the enhancements kick in and what have you, obviously the variables change.
Well, there's no restriction on the updating of MRS plans, be they the higher-level emergency operations plans or their ANISCs or SOPs. Jurisdictions are free to modify those, and I'm sure many have undertaken modifications as the Katrina Rita lessons learned are made available to folks. And in the light of the fact that pandemic flu planning has become more formalized and updated with Health and Human Services in the lead, we have a national strategy out of the White House, and we have the HHS pandemic flu planning, which in essence is, if I may say, the most dire scenario in the sense that it's happening everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The decrement, as few folks get ill, the decrement in first responder and medical treatment staff, and then the viability of critical infrastructure. So that brings to the fore continuity of operations planning for critical infrastructure. But so there's two dynamics. The state home and security strategies are required to be updated when the grant applications come in. They were updated last fall because of the national priorities under HSPD 8. And a state can amend its strategy or UIC as it needs, and so. But it's a little more formalistic process than the local MRS plans. So again, the MRS plans are updated. They're the proverbial living documents, and the Homeland Security strategies are a little more formalistic, but they need to be congruent with each other.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's look at one plan in particular, the pharmaceutical plan, as it relates to the caches. And also, do you want to say anything about the ChemPAC program?
Thanks, John, for bringing us to that critical asset. At the risk of being a little too simplistic, I would say the most valuable resources in metropolitan area mass casualty capabilities are trained and motivated personnel, and the pharmaceutical and medical supplies available to deal with the situation, especially the chemical and biological aspects. The MRS pharmaceutical cache is under local control. It's designed against 1,000 chemically exposed victims and up to 10,000 biologically exposed victims. Those numbers will need to change, of course, under the performance measures and guidelines that are evolved under the target capabilities. But what we advocate, and again, it's up to each MRS to decide the purposes of those caches as to recipients, how much to first responders and how much to the general public. We do not prescribe that, and it's one of the myths of the program that it's only for the first responder community. We're hoping that first responders have a higher priority there because they're the folks who go out and need to continue to help other people. But actually, in our 06 grants guidance, we're requiring the establishment on a multi-jurisdictional, whatever the operational area basis for the MMRS, of a unified database of the MRS pharmaceutical cache, the HRSA hospital-provided cache, which is for the hospital personnel and EMS, hospital-based EMS folks and their families, and the chem packs that may be present in that area, so that there'll be a unified view of those assets. And when it goes operational, you can then have a picture of what's drawn down and what remains as and if you're accessing the strategic national stockpile, which is, of course, the big daddy for pharmaceuticals and medical supplies. So ChemPak is a near real-time asset. It's not for immediate use because, it's as you your readers probably know, it's under a controlled environment and controlled physical security. So whereas the MRS pharmaceutical pharmaceutical cache can be forward deployed on police, fire, EMS vehicles. So I think that's an important adjunct to the total mass prophylaxis resource capabilities, so that you kind of escalate from the MRS cache and the hospital cache that HRSA provides, then to the chem packs, and then some states have state-level caches. And then the SNS comes along.
And then, but so, you also have an NDMS cache, don't you, through their team?
Right, but I believe that's for their own use. It's not much in there for the general public. That's so that they can remain viable in a WMD environment.
Understood. Okay. I want to ask you more about equipment. How do you have your jurisdictions harmonize their equipment purchases with the other federal programs when they acquire things like pharmaceuticals and PPE and detection and monitoring gear that you mentioned?
Well, we do have a, if you will, the official catalog, which is the authorized equipment list, which is part of our grants guidance and resides electronically at the responder knowledge base. Again, under TP's website, under where LLAS resides. All these are together as the resource. Now, this is the official catalog of pharmaceuticals, medical communications, information technology, equipment, and services that are authorized under the grant program. And I'd like to mention that brings me to the point of our increased coordination with Health and Human Services and the grants program. Last summer, there was established the DHS-HHS Grants Coordination Steering Committee, and the 06 Homeland Security Grants Guidance Package reflects coordination with HHS on some common language in the general section, some language in the MRS section, and the fact that in the authorized equipment list, which is arranged by programmatic columns, it'll show you what's authorized under the state grant, the UASI grant, we've in MRS, now we've added the CDC Public Health Cooperative Agreement authorized list, a column for that, and the HRSA Hospital Preparedness List column for that. So for the benefit of our customers, we are undertaking efforts to bring together some of the guidance between the two departments and the White House Katrina Lessons Learned report, which was available Thursday, has a recommendation, I think it's number 61, to do that very thing. And so we were happy to have that endorsement from the top. Another point, we did have a meeting of Friday, the day after the Katrina White House report came out, a long-scheduled meeting of HRSA and CDC project officers and our preparedness officers together in a room on the tail end of the NACHOS local, state, federal summit. And these folks are looking for increased collaboration and cooperation in the field as they help the state and local customers.
I guess this might be a related question. I know you have a number of special projects in the program, and one that caught my attention was the mobile field hospital concept, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg. Can you tell us a little bit about that and any others that have come online since or indeed are about to come online?
Well, that's a rather a famous one, and I need to stipulate that that is indeed a unique, and I use that word advisedly, capability which is enabled by earmarked funding. It is not typical of MRSs. One could argue that in certain very large metropolitan areas there should or should not be such a capability, but that one now is deployed again to the New Orleans area as their ongoing shortfall in medical treatment capability during Katrina recovery. We were able, on the special projects, we had sufficient funding in 2004 to enable some internally competitive awards. We had $3.5 million available for this, and we were able to award 16 projects. We had 79 applications from among the jurisdictions to do this, and these are posted on our website. If you drill down and find the 2004 grant material, I'd like to mention just a few along the way, if I could. Tucson, Arizona received funds for what they call a virtual tour of interactive training for a mass casualty dispensing site. They worked this out with a local college of pharmacy to do an interactive resource and training module for setting up and managing a mass prophylaxis dispensing site. Now, and I'm aware of other efforts to do that, but that's an important way to enhance the training for that. Anaheim, California undertook a very large-scale project that's still working. Most of these are still underway, a little more than halfway done. A couple of them have been completed, but what Anaheim has undertaken is to create an interoperable CBRNE communications network system with GIS to enhance MRS command decision-making and resource management, training delivery, emergency public warning and risk communications. So it's a very complex system. And again, these details are up on our website. But one that has been completed is a media workshop of public health emergencies by Sedgwick County, Kansas, where is Wichita, and to stimulate a greater understanding among news media. By the way, I happen to become aware that the National Press Club hosted an event on this same topic just last Wednesday night in the context of pandemic flu preparedness. But it was a scenario-based tabletop exercise in this package that facilitates discussions of the media's understanding, exploring the need for continuity of operations by media organizations and the like. Another large-scale one is in Rochester, New York, what has the acronym ETIN, Eaton Emergency Training and Information Network. They're collaborating with a local public television station, WXXI, to implement a new generation of region-wide emergency training and information, thus Emergency Training Information Network, ETIN, continuous electronic library of training and information, automated systems and interoperable communications, utilizes secure digital airwave transmission, provides additional bandwidth to incorporate peripheral services, such as data casting, which is something I'm just learning about through this special project application. And then, I would say, Columbus, Ohio, trained public school staff in CPR and AED first aid under the start and jump start principle, so that in any event that would occur in a school, you have, in addition to the school nurse, some other folks available to help the situation. Those are just some examples. They're underway. Again, all of them are at least more than halfway completed, and a couple of them have been completed. So purpose of these special projects is to fund innovative approaches that have the potential application on a widespread basis.
Data casting. That's a
pretty sophisticated term up there. There's several. They're using the sub-channel of the public TV station, and they're using a concept they call electronic skins, which I'm sure my children probably know more about that than I do, but we're watching the Rochester one pretty significantly up there. Yeah.
Some time ago, you referenced a good depiction of integrated response to a mass casualty incident, the so-called mayhem model that originated with Joe Barbera and a colleague at George Washington. You know, I worked with Joe, who was a participant in a number of my bioterrorism tabletops with Armed Forces Journal and MIPT, which you mentioned out in Oklahoma City. Tell us a little bit about his model and how it helps the thinking and structuring an MMRS system. And I guess exercising it in the event, conducting an actual response if something happens.
Well, mayhem, which is there's M-A-H-I-M, but an interesting pronounceable situation there, was is a large-scale system description, as I would say, which was completed in December of 2003. And had a significant foundation funding. Not having done a thorough literature search, so I'm a little at risk in saying this, but it is definitely, that has come to my awareness, the most complete systems description, both narrative and in its depiction of that very large fold-out chart that they developed, of a multi-jurisdictional, mutual aid-supported mass casualty response. And they do mention in the preface of the system description that it does relate to the MMRS program concept. So I think persons who wanted to look at detailed integrated depiction from triage through definitive treatment through special needs populations and the mental health component, unified incident command, unified command, that I could recommend that. And there may be others out there, and I apologize to those, but that's a, I think it's a 90-some page narrative of the system description. So folks who wanted to step back and look at, if I could say, a practiced university setting approach to this to this problem, that really does cover it from if you will say, teeth to toenails.
Yeah. Dennis, beyond the equipping and exercising and training, I know that you have an interest in automated simulation and gaming techniques. How far along are you with that, and what are some of the examples you'd want to share with us?
Well, actually, John, this is still in the concept stage. There are several modeling, simulation, and gaming tools already available to our grantees, and there's information on that through the Homeland Security Exercise Evaluation Program website. There are other initiatives that have been undertaken by different colleges and universities and others in that regard. But I think what's important to do is to enable our local and state decision makers, and I would include in that sake of being a little narrow about it, but say the lieutenant and captain level and above in our metro areas and state officials, and others as we'd add to the participation, to deal with a uniform set of issues and a database that collects their decisions and rationale in a secure data environment as we apply the national planning scenarios and any other scenarios that are pertinent for their consideration, that would replicate their geographic demographic setting. If it was done in Cincinnati, it would definitely look like Cincinnati. Same thing any other area, St. Louis. And to have a group iteration where folks interact as they would based on their local plans, and then take the results of that, capture it, make it available online, again, all in a secure environment, and then also have desktop iterations of that so that if an EMS director wanted to revisit a part of the game or simulation recently done, or to examine what his or her colleagues have done throughout the nation and contribute to the database insights from their desktop, it would help get at our problem of a decrement of decision-making skills or crisis management decision-making skills, which inevitably occurs between large-scale exercises and training events. So I'm hoping that we can make progress in that arena.
Dennis, I've got a couple of final questions. I said in the introduction the MMRS focus is on a response in the early hours. I'm curious to hear more about your thoughts on sustainability. People are now talking about 72 hours of sustainability in light of Katrina. And some folks, like retired Army General Donna Barbish, are saying that we need to think of even longer terms. Have you got any thoughts about what is necessary, what is actually doable, and how this kind of question arises and relates to the MMRS program?
That's extremely pertinent issue and question and opportunity. And again, I would bring it back to the HSPD-8 context on these targeted capabilities. There is a concept among the 12 elements of each target capability. Each document is rather elaborate. The notion of tiering, T-I-E-R-I-N-G, as to what level, at what level should resources and capabilities exist, be it local, municipal, local, regional, state level, multi-state, or federal. And this is yet to be worked out. We have some notions, certainly informed by the HRSA Hospital Preparedness and Public Health benchmarks that have been out there, but those are changing. HRSA program is coming into a new funding cycle, and I think is going to move away from its traditional benchmarks. So as far as how much is needed and when, it's a very difficult calculus. When we do have the national planning scenarios as a guideline now as far as what to expect from certain events as far as number of injured and dead and long-term health and medical impacts. So a lot of good, creative, energetic people will need to continue to think about this as we move down the road of HSPD-8 as far as what the home-based capability, which I would offer is MMRS, rewritten, is what folks do to take care of their own situation until external resources arrive. What should happen at the state level? States have traditionally been gateways to access federal resources. They've been aggregators of situation awareness and formulators of resource requests. But in my view, states, as they look through this situation, will become more operational. And there are increasing numbers of state medical disaster teams being formed, more statewide hazmat teams, and even mobile medical treatment capabilities, which is another critical issue is when we deal with medical surge, what's the maximum you can achieve with your bricks and mortar setting, and then what needs to be done extramural to bricks and mortar. And a very interesting topic. Federal medical stations were deployed in their early iteration in Katrina situation. I think the Army turned over its last traditional MASH to the Pakistani folks who definitely needed it. So Army's going a new way in that regard. So all this needs to be sorted out, hopefully with increased understanding of uniformity regarding operational concept and equipping and training and exercise, and so that when folks go, say, from Kansas to help folks in California, that we have as close as we can to hit the ground, ready to operate, and little or no field training during the event.
Lastly, when NIMS, the National Incident Management System, was introduced, you talked about the need to ensure that MMRS operational concepts are NIMS compatible. How are you doing that, and what are some of the still-to-be-resolved issues that you're facing?
Well, I could say happily from the federal perspective, and probably a challenge to our grantees, is that everyone has to follow the NIMS Integration Center guidance, and they're into their second or third round of guidance now, is moving from just the training delivery to some actual more systems and hardware, and NIMCAST is a way to go online and check your status on NIMS compliance. It is a requirement of every federal grant program that deals with emergency management or disasters or to be NIMS compliant. So that's a uniform across the board. There is a great interest in sorting out how much of it is hardware as the best solution versus revised thinking on communications planning, allocation of spectrum, which is another huge issue. So, again, I think clearly Secretary Chertoff and others have continued this as being a high priority, and what folks will do is at least on a metropolitan regional basis, on a state basis, clear up the unnecessary gaps in compatibility that are just a happenstance of somebody's communications annex hasn't been updated, you know, since 1997 or 98, and that they're the use of 800 megahertz systems, SATCOM, ACP 100s or ACP 1000s and other gear. So it's an incremental long-term prospect, and I think there's additional effort being put on that.
Well, Dennis, this has been great. thanks so much for your time, and I hope we can check in with you again. And thanks very much for all your efforts in your public service.
Thank you very much, John. We appreciate it.